Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 46, Chris Wilkie. Chris is a very cool seller who has definitely figured out that selling full-time on Amazon is not what he wants to do. What he wants to do, he's doing. He's found the dream job that he has always wanted, the one that he loves, but it didn't quite pay enough. It gave him the flexibility and freedom he wanted, but it didn't quite pay enough. So what does he do? He controls his Amazon business, meaning that he only sells what he needs to sell, what he wants to sell, to make the income that he needs to supplement his unbelievable job that he has. I think it's a great way to think about it. It doesn't have to be all or nothing every single time. So let's get into the podcast. All right, welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. And tonight's guest, you know, I told him I'm going to introduce him this way because I just love it. It's a gentleman who went to college and frankly never really left. Well, and it's not quite as cool as that, and you know, I keep thinking of I'm trying to think of that movie where the guy never left college and he's still in the frat houses, and it's not quite as cool as that. He's a cool guy, but he's not quite that lifestyle. Hey, welcome, Chris Wilkie. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you very much. I'm excited to be on today. And I did leave college for like a year and a half, but then I wanted to go back.
Yeah, but you got to get, let me, you know, I want that image. I always say that about Chris Bond. You know, he's cruising down the road, his hair's flying back. You know, it's that sexy image, right? The sexy image of college never leaves, right? You just, you know, you stayed there, and now all of a sudden these 19-year-old, oh, I don't want to go there. We shouldn't say that. So you are an e-commerce seller who has a full-time job, and you have a job, as you told me, that you don't think you'd ever leave. You love it.
Yeah, I absolutely love it.
How many people can say that?
Until about 3 months ago, I was one of the probably 95% who couldn't say that, and then made the switch over to this job and found out that in a position where they kind of let you do your own thing and you're the expert when you're doing it, it's quite awesome because not only do I get to do the social media, the website, all the stuff I love to do, they also put me in charge of the alumni store. So I get to play around in the e-commerce world in a whole different ballpark than I typically do.
So you really get to do the things that you love. And when you do that, it's not a job. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. Because I'd probably volunteer for this if I wasn't getting paid.
You know, how do you help people? I mean, you must meet students. Do you get a chance to talk to students at all?
I work for the foundation, so I get to talk to mostly alumni.
Okay. But younger alumni, right? I'm sure you get to older alumni too. But, I mean, do you get a chance to give advice at all? And is that the kind of advice you're giving?
What I always give people, and I've done this since I graduated, is don't go anywhere and do anything for the money. Have fun. Enjoy what you're doing, and the money will follow you.
We were in church today, and a friend of mine, his son is, I guess he's a sophomore, maybe freshman or whatever. And I said, well, have you started thinking about college and that? And he said, as a matter of fact, yeah, this week he met with his guidance counselor. And he told his guidance counselor that he wants to be a professional fisherman. And the guidance counselor's like, hey, I hope you have a B plan, you know, just really squashing his dream. This kid is one of the best bass fishermen I've ever seen. I mean, just, you know, he's this young kid. He's been fishing forever. And they squashed his dream already, like basically saying, nah, that's not a real job. You're never going to make it. You got to have a, you know, you're going to have to go to college forever and earn this degree because that's the only way you're going to make it. And, you know, my advice to him was this: look, don't decide on something for the rest of your life. I think a good business degree is applicable in the fishing world, right? Because there are companies that are involved in it, and it could be, but don't make a decision for the rest of your life. Do you think
my advice would be a lot different?
Okay.
Not to say that you shouldn't go to education or everything. My advice would be, if I was the guidance counselor, you find a way to have a steady income that maybe 5 hours a week you're working at, and then practice to become that fisherman. Because I find that a lot of people have in their mind the only way you can make money is go to school, graduate, get a job, work it for 30 years, be done, dandy. You're just going through the process. And I think it really what it is go to school, get some experiences that will put you in situations that you can grow and flourish down the road. Maybe take a job for a little bit, maybe not. You don't have to follow a certain path, but my college degree helps me understand doing some of the Amazon stuff that I probably would have never gave it the time of day if I wouldn't have went through that. So I like to work, and when I switched jobs, I actually took a pretty large pay cut to actually go to this job. And the reason I did that was because they give me 5 weeks vacation a year. I get to be on campus. We work shorter hours in the week or during the summer. It was just everything that was important to me. And
so that lifestyle again.
Yeah, it was a lifestyle decision. And the reason I was able to do that was because I had the extra income coming in from my side of Amazon.
Oh, that's a great way to look at it. I just coached my son who's in college now, and I said to him, I said, look, buddy, you got to max out your 401k as soon as you get your job, pay your bills, and then when you want to have fun money, get a side hustle. That way, if you want to do more fun stuff, you just work a little harder, and I want to build those habits. And you're kind of describing that where you're taking – you took a lifestyle position that you really love and supplement it with an Amazon business. And, you know, I'd asked you your sales, and I know and you really weren't growing, and it's kind of intentional in some ways, right? Because you're looking only to supplement what you're doing. You're not looking for a full-time career or a full-time income.
I never want to be somebody who relies on one source of income for everything. I would rather have 5 to 10 different sources of income coming in so that if one gets cut off, I have 5 or 6 more to fall back on.
Where does that come from? I mean, did you come from an entrepreneurial family?
My dad, my parents, when I was a senior in high school, bought me a set of DJ equipment and told me, idiots can get businesses started. You'll be okay. Here you go. Figure it out.
So that was kind of an offhanded compliment, I think maybe.
So maybe. So I started the DJ business, which – I actually hired myself for my first job because I was class president as well. So it's a very interesting situation, but actually grew that during my entire time at college and never had a full-time job in college because I would give up my Saturday and go DJ for the week.
But it was, again, something you loved, right?
Yeah, until you get 5 or 6 years in DJing and you're like, I've seen every wedding reception known to man, and I'm tired of this.
How many chicken dances can you have done? How many have you done in your life?
The chicken dance is about 15 or so. If I have to hear the cha-cha slide or the Cupid shuffle again, I may go insane. Uh-huh. I actually know all the words to those, so it's quite scary and sad all at the same time.
Well, you know what, though? But I mean, just think of that. Again, it's another experience that you put under your belt. And you probably got to deal with people. You probably had to negotiate deals with people, right? You probably had to chase people for money. So all those skills are transferable over to a business.
Exactly.
Yeah, again, that's another way to look at these life experiences. I think that that's pretty smart. And so neither one of them, though, were entrepreneurs. He just pushed you. Why would he push you? Do you think that was something in his life he missed, or did he want to kick you out of the nest and give you the tools so you can kind of feed yourself?
I think that my dad and my mom, not entrepreneurial on that side of it. Now, completely different. My dad actually left his job to do Amazon full time. So it's been kind of round circle, but it always kind of projected to me that you needed to have this. He was a steel worker. Got laid off by the company, had kind of that one mentality, I work here for 30 years, I'm done. And I think he saw that with him, that if he could shift the mindset of me, maybe a little different. And I tend to take to things very quickly. So for him, it's a lot of research, a lot of figuring it out. He actually started doing Amazon before me. And then I started ramping it up so fast that he was like, Chris, you passed me on this. But now we're pretty even on everything. So it's just a fascinating way everything kind of funneled together.
Well, that's interesting. So you're saying that he didn't go to college. He was a steel worker. Mm-hmm. And then so he gave you, you know, you don't want your kids to do better than you. He helped you get a college degree in some way and encouraged that and so helped that. But then now he's saying, hey, also have a side hustle. I mean, it's just interesting to me that his ability to change. Probably he would have done well in college too. Do you think so?
Well, he did do well in college for what he had, and then they had me. So that kind of throws a wrench in a little bit of that there. But both of my parents were extremely intelligent. And I think that they always just didn't have that action bias to kind of just do it. And I've always been just jump in and figure it out. So that's kind of why the entrepreneurship led on my side of it. I mean, between all this, I had a digital marketing company for a year and we sold it. Between from the time I graduated to now, it's just been a fascinating life of business and really weird things that have happened.
Is your father different today as an Amazon entrepreneur as opposed to the steelworker coming home tired? And
yeah, I think he was out hunting today. Actually, I'm not sure what he was doing.
And he wouldn't have been doing that if it's Sunday, so it's a little bit hard. But, I mean, he wouldn't have been able to do that in his normal job, right, in his normal life, right? Yeah. Just to come and go as he wanted to.
Yeah, and he's been in that whole lifestyle design area where he works as a contract worker for the company he left because he had a skill set that they still needed. So he negotiated higher wages and works part-time. So he goes in when he wants to do it and then goes shopping for Amazon when he wants.
And so that's similar to you. He wants that lifestyle.
Exactly.
And I think that's so important. I think, when I listen to people talk about their why, it generally is not money. I mean, there are a few times it's been money or to get themselves out of a bad situation or, they had to make their mortgage that month. But it's evolved into that lifestyle, that freedom, right, to do what you want. I mean, 5 weeks vacations and shorter summers means that you could do pretty much whatever you want, with your family, right?
Yeah, I get more enjoyment out of going and playing golf on a Friday evening than I do having a boat that's going to sit in my backyard. I want my freedom to do what I want to do, and it doesn't have to be something that's expensive. I just like my time.
I just love it. I just love it. A young guy figuring this out, I just think, is so smart. I hope. I just interviewed Gary Baird. I don't know if you know Gary. Gary's an English teacher, high school teacher. And, he talks to his kids about entrepreneurship because they're in a poverty area and they don't see a way out. And everybody kept telling them college is the only way. And that's pretty much unaffordable for a lot of them. And he's like, no, there's a lot of other ways to get ahead in life. And it's just so different to have those conversations because when I grew up, that was not the way it was. You either went to college or the military, right? Yeah, the military. And the kids that went in the military back then were the kids that were in trouble. It was the military or jail for a lot of kids. Mm-hmm. Wow, it's a interesting road. And so what do you see on the college campus that you're at now? Do they teach entrepreneurship?
That's why I love Ball State. It's one of the top schools for entrepreneurship. But they do a lot of immersive learning projects. And the word immersive doesn't even exist. They kind of made it up. But instead of just sitting in a classroom, they take you out and go, here's a problem in the business world. Figure it out. And they just give you kind of the reins to work with the company and the resources they have to kind of teach you how to handle real life situations instead of just sitting in a classroom.
Is the market then around you a lot of startups?
Ball State's not a huge university by any means, but we don't have that startup culture around typically. The people will graduate there, move to Indianapolis, and we have a very big tech startup culture there.
Okay. But it's a feeder for that area then, right? They're coming at it. Oh, that's really cool. And it's kind of cool how to see it's all circular, how it's all – you've come full circle. Your life has come full circle from your family, and then you're in an environment. I mean, I just think that's all pretty neat how things come together sometime. All right. I want to take a break. And when we come back, I want to start talking about – how your Amazon business is going, how you had a bump in the road this past year, how you climbed out of that pit, and what others can learn from it. So let's take a break. We'll be right back. Excited to bring on a new sponsor today, YourSourcedInventory.com. That's YourSourcedInventory.com, where they focus on shoes and clothing, great gated categories, high average selling price. Remember that high average selling price with a good return of investment means more profit in your pocket. Here's some stats they sent me for September. In shoes, they averaged the top 2%, average rank of 7,000, net profit of almost $30 with an ROI of 89%. Those are good numbers. Clothing, top 2 to 3%, average rank was 4,000.
$1,132, net profit of about $12, and ROI, again, of 104%. Those are great. These are online deals that are sent to you 5 days a week. You get 10 items a day. You're going to be able to grow your business from the comfort of your home. This is exactly what we needed for our business. It's the reason we're using them. So we think this is a great way that you can move forward in a great category. YourSourcedInventory.com. YourSourcedInventory.com. In this segment, we're going to talk about Chris's Amazon suspension. He went through and got suspended, and he talks about why. He admits he's made some mistakes. I think there's been many people who've made some of these mistakes and probably were a little more lucky than Chris. But I think when you come out on the other end, I think Chris has given some great advice on how you can avoid getting that suspension. Let's get back into the podcast.
All right, we're back, and we're talking with Chris Wilkie, and Chris is a part-time Amazon seller by design, and it's intentional in his life because he is using, and quite frankly, you're the only one that I've talked to who's really filled in their full-time job because, you know, they want that. They have that freedom. They found a freeing job, but they wanted to make just a little bit more money, and so that's why they have this side business. And I just think that's just such a great way to look at it and so fresh thinking. And you're the first I've heard of that, Chris. I really appreciate that.
I like to be on the cutting edge whenever.
You are the cutting edge. That's it. That's going to be your nickname, Cutting Edge, Chris Wilkie. All right, Chris, tell us the good, bad, and ugly of 2015.
Oh, this was what you would call for a most Amazon sellers – a very up and down year for me. Starting off in January, great influx of sales. I had so much inventory I bought right around Christmas from a lot of discount stores around here. Sent a bunch in. January was my second highest month I ever had. And then you had your slowdowns a little bit, but still kept pretty steady sales. I was averaging $5,000-$10,000 a month through that area. And then all of a sudden, I'm out at the golf course in May, and I get this wonderful little email from Amazon saying, your account's been suspended. Sorry. Thanks. You can write a suspension appeal if you want. And then that was about it. And
this was, you know, May. So were you in the wave of everybody getting canceled? Were you the cutting edge again? Were you at the beginning of it?
It was mid-ground. Okay. Had heard of the account suspensions going out, and kind of looking back at it, I should have seen it coming. Mm-hmm. That's the one thing that when I was writing out my blog series about it and talking with other people, I found out that, yeah, if you look back, I was kind of an idiot. I scaled too fast. I was doing that whole, okay, well, I'm just going to hustle as fast as humanly possible. And have my garage would be full all the time. And so when your garage is full and you need to get stuff shipped out, you just start throwing it in boxes. Your quality control slips a little bit. And that's what led to the suspension. I tried to get out of it. Didn't work. To this day, that account's gone. It was kind of a really bad day when you get all the boxes back with all of your inventory.
Wait. So the account, they closed it. There's nothing.
Nope. That account is gone. That we had to get all 3,000 items shipped back to my house.
At 50 cents a piece.
Oh, yeah. It was a blast. Mm-hmm. Especially when you come and you can't even get in your front door because the boxes are too high. Those were the days where you're like, oh, this will be fun. So what ended up happening was I had a business partner, friend from college, that I ended up selling all of my inventory to at cost just to get my money back on it. And he ended up putting it all into his account, selling it, basically liquidated it out for himself because he got it very cheap. So once he was all done, we had a little talk and he goes, Chris, I'm not going to be doing this Amazon stuff anymore. It's like, I don't want to do it. I like what I'm doing here. Do you think you maybe want to do something with me, kind of partner up again? So what ended up happening is I kind of acquired his business in a sense. Mm-hmm. And for a cost of an Apple Watch, to this day, it's the cheapest business transaction. Mm. But switched over there, so now we kind of run a dual business, but it's solely me, and he's just there as the person that's there.
And he benefits some way, yes. Right? Whatever your arrangement is,
yeah,
right?
So we have an arrangement, so, he benefits from it, and we're all good, but essentially I have purchased his business and run it.
Obviously, you said looking back, you knew what was going wrong. Would you mind elaborating a little bit on it? And then, more importantly, what protections you put in place to ensure that it doesn't happen again? Because I think that is, you know, when I look at people's fear, they believe that there's just this robot out there searching the web, you know, the Amazon web, looking for patterns, and then, oh, you meet the pattern, check, kick you out, yeah. Next.
No. What it is, you have to look at it through the eyes of the consumer. Everything that Amazon does that sellers go, oh, they're out to get us, it's not. It's to make the consumer experience better, because the more consumers they have, the better business they're going to have. So that's the one thing a lot of sellers always think, well, Amazon's out to get us. No, not quite. But the things that really, looking back, triggered the suspension, I had a bad batch of products. I got them in, and they weren't – I sent an item in that was supposed to be a 3-pack, and I had it as a 2-pack. The ASIN got switched during the shipping process. So when it got in there, the listing was different than when I shipped it in. And sold a bunch of them very quickly because my price was a lot lower too when it hit the warehouse. So I got
a
bunch of returns on that. Product not as described on the website. Big dink there. And then I had a few other ASINs that were having issues like that. And you compile all of these item not as described, throw a few negative reviews in there. The recipe for disaster was just – it was started. And if I would have started reining it back quicker, catching on when I got these performance notifications, and instead of trying to say, okay, I'm going to keep selling, just ignore that, prepping a little bit better and trying to pull out that stuff, going, okay, we need to pull this back now. I need to go through it, see what's wrong with it, and then I'll ship it back in. Didn't do that. So looking back, what I've learned and what we have in place now is there's a whole different process that I use to get in there when I'm listing. I now scan an item. I look it up on Amazon. I look at it. I make sure everything is an exact match. If not, I submit the changes to Amazon, and I wait until they're approved before I list something. Everything is prepped to the best of my ability. I no longer just throw things in a box and say Amazon will sort it out, which is a really bad attitude to have. And I've tried to not go so much for volume, and I've really switched to doing what is achievable with my current situation.
Now, have you gone to different categories, or are you still in the same basic categories?
I'm really just – I do health, beauty, grocery. I've gotten into shoes and clothes a little bit, but my bread and butter is still toys.
Okay.
But as of tonight, actually, earlier this evening, I was at an Ace Hardware, and I bought all of their clearance. I made a deal with the guy, and I said, I'll take it all. So I've got like 7 boxes of clearance I need to go through from home improvement goods. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. We sold in that category. When you say you have controls in place, right? So I'm just trying to picture your process must be a lot slower now.
Yes. So what used to happen is I'd go into a store, and if something – I pretty much – if there's profit, I'd buy it.
Okay.
That's how it looked. So now when I'm going into a store, each product I have – anything I buy has to be – if I was a consumer, that's the one I'd pick up off the shelf.
Right. So the dented corner on the Lego set isn't working anymore.
No, that used to work. I'll say, I'll be fine. We'll be good. We'll send that in. That's not what I do anymore. The quality control starts during the purchasing. And then as I go through prep, if anything is of question and I'm prepping it, so I peel a sticker off and I rip something, or it got damaged in the back of the trunk, now I'm looking very closely at those kind of items, and I'm making sure that I go through and go, okay, this item could be fragile. Let's bubble wrap it. Let's put it in a poly bag. Let's make sure this is all okay. And I'm taking my time through that, where before it was me and my father-in-law and a couple of beers, and we were scanning stuff. I was tossing it across the garage to him, say, hey, throw this in there. We don't do that anymore.
Okay, that makes sense. You know, thinking about that, right? And so if that is a process that somebody wants to go, all they really have to do is find a higher average price item, because the prep time is usually pretty much the same, right? I mean, assuming you don't have the bag and you know, really do a lot with it. But, you know, to put a $80 pair of shoes and prep them as opposed to a $12 candle, you know, bad example, but a candle to $12 that you got to bubble wrap and stretch and all that kind of jazz. So in essence, it's the same amount of work, or maybe a little bit more work with the candle, but you can just raise your average selling price because you intentionally slowed down. Again, in your model, you said, hey, I'm slowing down because I'm going to take more time with it. All you really have to do is take that different approach, and you can still achieve the same revenue in essence, right?
Yeah, and then what I've also done is I started going for a few liquidation sites. And I have one that I'm close friend, or actually family member is a part of, that's a little disconnected. But anyway, I've been buying bigger lots, and I'm getting them sent to prep companies, since I know they have the same quality control in place. And I've been getting it out of my hands, so I don't have to sit there and worry about it.
Well, what percentage of your inventory are you sending to a prep company?
It's very low. This just started within the last 2 months, so probably okay. About 5%. Huh.
Okay, 5%. What's your goal?
My goal would be to get it up to about 30 to 40%.
Okay. Okay. And so to add, in essence, add another set of hands, but yet not really have to hire anybody, right? You just outsource that piece of it.
Yeah.
Do you do any online arbitrage too?
Oh, yeah. Do a lot of that. And that is where I'm trying to – my online arbitrage bit is where I'm trying to switch it over to the prep companies.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I interviewed now I'm going to draw a blank on the person who told me this, but it was so brilliant, Todd Lammy. And what he said was, hey, Steve, you know, he's in Austin, Texas, and he said there are prep companies all around the country. You really should be in several, because for a couple of reasons. One, he does a lot of clothing. He said shoes come in from New York. Clothes come in from California. That's pretty much the rule, right, on a lot of things. And he said, I have prep companies in both of those areas because it can get in there faster than you. I can get it turned around quicker. And quite frankly, it's cheaper to ship it to there. And I save in shipping almost the amount of the fees. But it also gives them the flexibility. So if one of the centers has a problem, one of the parts of the country has weather issues, I can move inventory around and still get it processed. And I'm like, man, that's just such a smart idea. Do you see yourself ever scaling to the point? Right now you're intentionally controlling your business. Do you see yourself in the future scaling to a point where you might need more help?
I want to get to a point in the next year or two where I have trained either a virtual assistant or somebody that I pay to do it, to do a lot of the online arbitrage for me and have it shipped to the prep companies. So in essence, I want to outsource about 40% of my business to 50% range and scale in that fashion, and then still have my fun, I like to go out and shop on a Saturday morning type of thing.
So you maintain your lifestyle,
mm-hmm.
but yet your lifestyle, work ethics and stuff, yet you benefit from putting effort in and out there. I like it.
So
I think that's really smart.
I would rather take the time to educate someone how to do it so that when I'm at a golf course – I know there's somebody somewhere working for me, and they're taking care of it because I've trained them to that point. And then still don't go above, like, okay, I don't need to scale 5 times the amount what I'm doing. I just need to outsource that 50% of what I'm doing so that my time is cut in half. I'm willing to pay extra in cost to do that because my time is worth something.
I think it's a really smart idea. I just interviewed Gary Baird, and his is coming out, as I said, tomorrow. And Gary talks about he's got 7 people that work for him, and he pays them either an hourly rate of $10 an hour or 10% of what they buy. And so, you know, he said every one of them wants the percentage, right? And it kind of makes sense, right? And so for his world, all he has to do is in his model, right? So your new model, he just adds that 10% into the cost
mm-hmm.
structure. So – and it's just so smart, because imagine having 7 people out there sourcing for you And they also do something smart with WhatsApp, and they communicate back and forth and say, hey, Target has this deal, blah, blah, blah. But it's just so smart. It's a fixed cost. He knows it's 10%. And so here's the model I want you to use, Chris. Don't go beyond this rate of return. Don't go beyond this price, blah, 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 blah. But he's already factored that in. I just think it's so smart. And to have seven people doing it, he's like, you know, they're just bringing in such volume consistently. I just think it's so smart. And so I encourage you to do that, and I think you'll be very successful at it.
See, what I've done is I've done this since, I can't even remember when. My cost of shipping on my Amazon app when I go out sourcing is it'll run between 75 cents to $1 a pound for shipping. And then
why is it so high?
The reason it is so high is because that's where I account for all of my prepping cost, and I did inventory placement. Okay. So okay. I was too lazy, and I'll just be honest, try to sort everything. Drives me up a wall. I hate it. I know it needs to be done, but instead I do inventory placement where anything big goes in one box, everything else goes in another box. And that has saved me a ton of time, but I account for that when I'm doing my scanning in the first place so that I already know that, okay, I got a 50% return on this item. That's already accounted for with all of my fees. So I just look at it a lot differently.
Okay, so that's your advice, right? So adjust, and you can do it in the inventory lab scanning tool, which I don't remember what the name of that one is. I use ScanPower, and ScanPower has the same thing. They both allow you to adjust it. So you put it in the shipping rate per pound instead of 22 cents to 275 cents. Sometimes I pay a dollar when it goes to California. You just raise those prices and to account for inventory placement. Now, on a small size thing, I think it's, what, 35 cents. What is it on a large item?
It's so it ranges like 30 cents, and then they charge like 5 cents a pound for that. I haven't looked at it in a while, so I can't tell you. I just had done it. But when I had done the original math, my average shipping cost was about 30 cents a pound for an item to a warehouse. And, for instance, I live in Indiana. So turning on inventory placement, it makes me send the items to Tennessee and Kentucky. So I can ship a 50-pound box that's a 18 by 18 by 24 for $7.20. And some of those boxes have 150, 200 items in it. So I know that I was paying a lot in inventory placement, but I also know I was getting a really, really low cost for shipping. And when you look at the app, it's already going, okay, well, this is 1 pound of shipping, so that's 75 cents. And the costs were just kind of all intertwined, and I was still making money, and I was accounting for the extra cost I'd be having.
Right. It makes perfect sense. And I think the best way to do it is through average cost. And don't get down into the minutia, because it doesn't bring you any more value, right? It's an average. You know, you lose some money on this one, you make some money on this one, shipping wise. Mm-hmm. And so I just think that's just a smart way to do it. Well, it sounds like you really, really have grown and figured out a lot of things. Again, because you're looking to fill in your lifestyle, you're not looking for a job.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I think more people have to think about it that way. They don't need a job. Don't make this business a job. You already have a job. You don't, and in your case, you don't want to give up your job like I don't. I'd like to take us now to your skill set. So you're clearly very intelligent, right? And what do you think your biggest strength is as an entrepreneur?
Mine is sales. I'll be upfront. Mm. My college degree is sales and economics. I got two while I was there. I like to talk to people. I like to fix problems, and that's what I like to do. So I look at things through a whole different world. If somebody says this is a problem, I don't go, well, how do we fix it? I go, well, how can I fix it for you and then 10 other people?
Hmm.
That's kind of the way I look at things. I know I overcommit myself to a lot of stuff, but I try not to do that anymore. But I'm always constantly looking at how to improve something. And instead of saying it's a problem, I look at it as an opportunity for some sort of service or a product to fix it.
Is that where FBA Master came from?
FBA Master was a complete joke when it started. I told John, we have three people that help us or that work with me on it. Myself, John, Saison, and Mike Garner. And we were part of Ryan Grant's online selling experiment blog or Facebook group. And I wanted to start a small group that could share items to buy in store.
So a Bolo exchange group. That's all I wanted to do. And then I said, well, guys, I think I can start a Facebook group. That'd be pretty good. And started it. That was on Halloween of last year, and now we're up to almost 7,000 members this year.
Yeah, I was going to say, you got 7,000 members in this little joke, so you must be doing something right. So why are people joining the group? I've been a member for a long time. Why are people joining the group?
I think it's because I'm myself, and we're not trying to be some sort of gurus or somebody who's, I've got this blah, blah, blah to teach you magic to sell things. I'm just a normal guy, and Mike and John are normal guys too, and half the stuff I do, I will tell you flat out when I make a mistake. It's not uncommon for me to make mistakes at all. And I think that just genuineness of the group and us putting out some great content for free really builds the audience, and they come and people hear about it. Hey, this crazy Chris guy decided to launch a campaign to help Andy Slammons when he had a house fire. That was just because I thought it'd be nice for somebody to do something like that. And we raised like $13,000 from the online communities. So I just do stuff randomly and be myself, and that ends up building up the community.
What do you see the group – what would you – you know, now that there is a little bit of a vision to the group – what would you like it to become?
Honestly, I want to just keep doing what it's doing. We have so many really extremely educated people in there. And at first it was a lot of, I had to answer questions. I had to be hands on there. And I'm at the point now where by the time I get a notification that a question's been asked, 5 group members have already answered it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, and they grow together then, right?
Yeah. And that's what I want to see. I want to see it continue to grow and continue to be a lively community and not something that just gets stagnant and dies off.
You do see a lot of that. I mean, there's a community starting just about every, I guess, 2 or 3 a day anymore. And they see some activity and then it tends to dry up, right?
Yeah.
And so you're saying basically, was it October of this year or October of last year start?
Last year.
Okay, so a year plus, you're still growing.
Yeah. And
so you must be connecting in some way.
We try to do things that are just – you will never see a product from me, info product, anything, probably runs over $100. I am not in the market to charge a crap ton of money to somebody for education. I would rather give you my best secrets for free than have you pay for it. I'd rather you sit there and go, how can I give Chris money? Because he just provided so much value that his hour he spent with me now made me $5,000. That's where I want to be at. I don't want to sit there and just be like, you can't talk to that Chris guy. I would just rather him be able to ask me a question and he get back to it and say, okay, yeah, I'll meet you in Ohio tomorrow and let's go sourcing and I'll buy your lunch. That kind of stuff.
Well, and that brings a question. So how do you make money in the group, right? So the group is free, right? You do vet the people coming in to make sure they're not, you know, it's awful to say this, Facebook hookers that show up on there. I don't know where they come from. But, I mean, and the information people, right, they're everywhere. How do you vet them? And then you are vetting them, right, I believe.
Yeah, we just split them. If they're spam, we'll remove them.
Okay.
But we do a little bit of vetting. You got to be a real person. We like you have a profile picture. But if you start causing problems, we'll reach out to you, number one, and talk with you. If you start posting spam, like if you're a Ray-Ban person or a naked
picture. Yeah, there's a lot of those guys around.
if you're one of those two, well, we're going to knock you out and block you from the group. But other than that, anybody's welcome to join. And the way we end up making money is a lot through affiliate links or affiliate programs that we have in place with people where we give our honest opinion about a tool, a course, a coaching, a service, and we'll show you the good, we'll show you the bad, and if you decide to do it, we'll tell you we get a commission for you from you on there, and that's how we do it.
Okay, and then you also have a listing service, right? Now explain to me what that is.
Oh, we have List Club, and so say you are struggling to find items online, we actually have list you can purchase of items that have great returns that are limited to like 5 people. So we've done the research. We've vetted the items. You can get the list and go out and purchase in the next hour. So we do. We have a monthly reoccurring one, and then we have random one-time off offers that'll pop up on our Gumroad site, and you can go, I want that. Great.
You know, I think I know the answer to this, right? And I think it's going to come back to your father kind of jumping you into the DJ business and you becoming, you know, getting out there on your own and asking questions and that. But did you have a fear about going into entrepreneurship in any way?
Honestly, when I started, not really. And I think that's kind of kept true because I really didn't have a huge failure at first. I think that was, I got lucky. And I still to this day don't have that kind of notion of a fear aspect of it. I try to do things with low capital investments. So you don't go out and see me buying 1,000 acres of land and building a theme park. Mine's more, I have a skill set and it's knowledge, and I try to find out how I can share that and make some sort of money off of it.
And you're not fearful. You're not operating from a fear point of view about getting suspended again, your Amazon account.
No. And I think if it happens, you only got half the story on what the whole summer was. Our affiliate account, my affiliate account also got shut down during that time, and they withheld like $9,000 from me.
Why'd they shut that? Because they were connected? They saw the IP were connected?
No, actually what happened was I'll admit, we were walking a fine line with it. My account was set up 5 years ago or so, and it had it where I said I was going to post my affiliate links on an old blog that I had, and I never updated that. So there was kind of rule breaking number one. And number two is you can't actively advertise items for resale. And we were running a group, Godfather Deals, which is still out there today, and we were posting over 100 items you could buy and reflip on Amazon. So we were getting great traffic through. Our average conversion rate was about 32% on those purchases, and the average for an Amazon affiliate is about 2%. Mm. So all of the signs were there that we were doing something that really wasn't up to par. And since our purchases were made invalid, they refused to pay us for that. So between the four people that I know got accounts shut down, we had over like almost $20,000 they owed us of some sort. And it was just kind of a mess, which is, you say fear, but I don't have that fear because I realize I'll mess up at some point and then I'll just find another way and try something else. Now okay. I've learned rules are really important to read. If you don't do that, that's the first thing I do now whenever I do anything, is read all of the rules I possibly can find, because if you don't know them, then you can't follow them.
Well, so in essence, you put controls in place, you put protections, and you're going to follow the rules. Unfortunately, the rules will change sometimes, and if you don't change with them, you could get caught in there. And I think that sometimes happens. I mean, I think back to, you know, 4 years ago is the wild, wild west in a lot of ways with affiliates, right? I mean, people had every kind of site back then, and now it's not acceptable, the same thing, right? And there are different rules. They've evolved. And if you don't change, you could get caught, and it could happen. So I get that. That's, I think, a healthier way to look at your business. Are you using any tools, or I guess I would say, you know, you're using scanning tools and that. Are you using any other kind of software to help you with your business?
Well, okay, so on the Amazon side, I use a repricer, Be Cool. I use Inventory Labs to help with the bookkeeping of it. I use Shoeboxed for all of my receipts. So I just put them in that magic envelope. They mm-hmm. disappear into oblivion, and then I have them. For the sourcing side of it, I use all the free extensions that are out there. Also use OA X-Ray to do a lot mm-hmm. of the quick online arbitrage and seeing that bit of it. But other than those are all of the tools or services or tools that I use.
Okay. And so, but you've got a pretty good and I think that people, if they would invest in these things, they can save the one thing that nobody has more, that nobody has enough of. It's time, right? And that's so critical. All right. Podcasts, books, anything you can give us that you think that might benefit our listeners?
Yeah. So actually tomorrow, so this will be, and I'll give you the link. We're getting ready to release a course for, and it's Online Sourcing Made Easy. And it has over 75 lectures that I recorded. of like deal finding sessions and tips and tricks and tools that you can use. And that's going to be released, so it'll be live by the time you guys are hearing this. And there will be a heavy discount code. We gave it away for free for a lot of people. So we do a discount code for everybody that didn't get in on the free bit. So you can get it for like $10.
Okay.
So yeah, I have it priced at $99. Whole Udemy mindset you have to go into. And I found out it's a lot better if you price it high and give a bunch of coupon codes out. You actually make more money. It's fascinating.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. And I'll have links to all that. Chris is going to send that to me. So when you hear this, I'll have links to it for you. How about books that you're using out there in the to just become smarter in your business or even in your life? I mean, anything that you're out there reading that you could recommend that people could say, hey, I got something from it, you know, or your 4-hour work week or things like that?
4-hour work week would be one I would pull right out of the top of my head. And then I love, love, love Rich Dad, Poor Dad. That one, I don't think enough people read it. And I think you can actually learn a ton. And if anybody really wants to read some old school stuff and honestly wants to understand why all this online selling works, Wealth of Nations, Adam Smith, well worth the read. You'll go, oh, well, this makes a lot of sense now.
I always recommend How to Win Friends and Influence People, too. I mean, it's just one of those great books. It's, you know, it was written so long ago where you can just sit back and just apply it in life, you know. I mean, it's just so many things you can take, and it really isn't new today.
No.
It's just a different, right? It's just different.
If you want one that really teaches you a short read, I mean, it takes like an hour, and I think it is probably one of the most powerful books you'll ever read, is Who Moved My Cheese.
Yeah, I love it. I was thinking he's going to say Who Moved My Cheese. Yeah, again, it's just so many great books. It's a great example. Why things are happening to you, right?
Yep.
Great. I'm going to write that one in there too. Okay, so you know the goal of the podcast is to help people move forward, right? They're stuck. They hit that limit. They're not in a position you are, right? They're just trying to make this be their job for now, right? They're trying to get there. And so they hit that point. Give us a tip or trick that people could put in their business tomorrow that they could start moving forward and get unstuck.
Here's what I've told anybody that I've ever coached or done anything with. When you're in your business, so tomorrow, get a piece of paper out and write down everything you've done on the day and time it. And then take a look back after your day's over and see where your time was wasted during the day. When I did this, it was fascinating because I learned that I spent so much time peeling stickers. I hate stickers.
Mm.
But I realized I did that, and then I took a lot of time processing receipts because I wanted to make sure everything was correct on there. And once you start seeing where your time is wasted at, you'll go, I don't have enough time. Then you look down and go, oh, well, I wasted 3 hours playing around on Facebook. Or I wasted an hour peeling stickers. I could have had a college kid come in or a high school kid come in and do that after school. You start finding the points at where your time is being wasted, and then you also see how valuable your time is.
I think it's great advice, you know, and you'll know where the revenue enhancing ideas are, right, that where your time is spent. And like you say, the time suck, right?
Yep.
Those things that just – and if you can get rid of those. And I think you got a great example, right? So you said that you hate peeling stickers, right? So you've been outsourced some of those functions whenever you can, or you just don't buy those things with the stickers, right, wherever you can.
Exactly.
Right?
I have this, that big haul I got from Ace Hardware. I'm going to be calling my guy at Thanksgiving break weekend anyway. So he's off this week. I have him. He's going to prep everything for me because I do not want to touch those stickers. And I've got more important things like finishing up a bathroom and an online course and podcasts and things to work on because one's going to make my wife happier, but others will make me money longer term.
That's really smart. And again, you come up with it, put it in place, and move forward. I think it's really great. All right, best way to get in touch with you, Chris?
Is the Facebook group or our blog, fbamaster.com, and it's the FBA Master Facebook group. Those are the two best ways. You can reach out to me. My personal email is chris@fbamaster.com. So if you reach out, I'd be happy to answer anything. And, yeah, that's how you get a hold of me.
Okay. And I'll have links to all that again in the podcast. Man, I appreciate you taking the time tonight. I think it's great. I think you've given me something new to think about and to be able to talk about with people. Find your ideal job, even if it doesn't pay what you want it to, and then use this side hustle. Right now it happens to be Amazon. This seems to be the best one to fill in that income gap. And it's just so smart. You still get to do what you love. I just think it's brilliant. It's a great thought, and it's something new for me to think about. So, man, I appreciate you taking the time. You have a great night.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on, and I look forward to talking with you again in the future.
I think it was a great interview because I think, again, just imagine it doesn't have to be all or nothing. You're working a full-time job right now. You're rationalizing how much you hate it because you see the glamour of all these full-time sellers and saying, oh, my God, it's such a glamorous job. They sit on the couch all day, click a button every once in a while. Well, that's not the truth. They work really, really hard, and if you try to scale up, you're going to realize that. So maybe you do have the ideal job, and maybe you just have to change your perspective a little bit. And I think Chris gives us a good example of having a better perspective on life and finding his why and finding that balance. He doesn't want to be a giant warehouse, doesn't want to have a giant warehouse with 10 employees and all the rest of the grief that goes along with that. He wants to make enough so he can still do what he loves. I just think that's great advice. Come on out to the podcast website, ecommercemomentum.com. There's lots more information for you out there, but I do appreciate you listening. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.